You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Show brought to you by Last Word on Sports. I'm Molly Smith, and joining me as always is Rob Mitchell. How are you doing, Rob?
I'm good, Molly. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Plenty of rugby to feast ourselves upon on today's show. So let's start off, of course, with the World Cup. South Africa lost to New Zealand 2018 in Saturday's semi-final at Twickenham. And Sunday, Argentina fell short of Australia, who made it into this Saturday's final. They won 29-15 against the Pumas. What did you make of both semi-finals, Rob?
Two contrasting games. Saturday's game, South Africa against the All Blacks. Very tight, very tough, very bruising encounter from both sides. It was always on a knife edge. Sunday's was far more open running rugby, but obviously that came with it the higher scoreline and the higher margin, a winning margin.
Yeah, I mean, both me and you were at Saturday's game. Mm. It seemed a lot more of a... It was a very tense atmosphere, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. South Africa put everything into it, and you did kind of feel it might just sneak it in the end, but the All Blacks had that discipline just to hold on. I mean, they gave away far too many penalties. I think New Zealand will be looking to rectify that before Saturday's final. Pollard had a great game. He kicked very well all game, so you can't really fault him at all. But there wasn't much expansion from South Africa when they got in. They didn't get into make many really incisive breaks into the 22 from a attacking point of view. But they held firm when New Zealand did the same to them.
Yeah, you almost got a feeling in those last 10 minutes that South Africa perhaps could have progressed further up the field a little bit more in an attacking style.
Yeah.
New Zealand, especially that last 40 minutes, seemed to camp out in the Springboks 22, didn't they?
Yeah, you just thought maybe South Africa, I know it was tight and they didn't want to lose more ground, but it's the World Cup semi-finals and you're down, maybe you need to throw a bit more caution to the wind.
Yeah, we'll just pick up on the conversion that it was... a two attempt of conversion for Dan Carter, the one of the Springboks players ran ran before the kicker had even moved, hadn't he?
Yeah.
So you know, is that something that referees need to be more aware of? And obviously Goss says at the weekend was very hot on it and allowed him to take the conversion again, and actually he did get that one over. Do you think referees need to be a lot more stringent on
they need to be aware of it. Some kickers, not particularly Dan Carter, take a very laboured run up and they do move just that little inch early, and when you get a player like Brian O'Banner who is so quick, they could charge it down. But the kickers are taking these kicks from so far out that the majority of players aren't going to be getting there anyway, which is why they're able to take these laboured sort of routines. It's just from a refereeing point of view not switching off at this point because they've got the try, they've got that decision whether it was with TMO or not, and just knowing they're still in a period of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we need to talk about Dan Biggar's kicking routine. I think everyone is very aware of that, as well as Owen Farrell's. Dan Carter doesn't really seem to have any sort of
It's not the same way that like Biggar is like dusting off his shoulders or whatever, and all the rigor and roll he goes through. But even down to sort of like going back, like all kickers have their own routine, whether it's particularly visual or not. In that scenario, I mean, we had Johnny Wilkinson had his arms out, and You see, Goromoro for Japan is something fairly similar from his point of view. It's what works and what gets them in that frame one to keep them consistent.
I think the crowd at Twickenham weren't too happy with that second kick because Dan Carter did seem to take a lot longer with placing that second conversion, almost to the point where he was making a real issue of it.
Yeah.
Do we need to? Obviously, the timing is an issue, but is this something that style of gameplay and that mental attitude? Do you think it's, you know, we don't need it in this sport, or do you think?
It's needed, but it you do get it. You get it with the scrums when teams are down to 10 men. You notice that they seem not 10 men. Sorry, they're down to 40 men for 10 minutes. You tend to get that the scrums being reset a lot more. So I don't think that's a coincidence, really, do you?
Yeah.
So yeah, the props know what they're doing. They know the ways in which they can get a scrum reset without giving away a penalty, and it just takes that little bit out of the clock. And yeah, if a kicker can get away with 10, 15 more seconds, he's going to do that if it's in a winning position. It's up to the referees to be stringent on these things. Like we said, charges down running too quickly with a kicker, well, if the kicker's taking too long, you say your time's up, kick it now or not.
Yeah. I don't think we've heard anything about any injuries out of the All Blacks camp.
Not heard anything, no. We've passed us. There's no sightings, so
there's no sightings, and I don't think there's any injuries. Despite the Richie McCaw fiasco.
Yeah, they slowed down and looking at it in three different ways, and yeah, as much as you want to see people punished for what they do, let's not start punishing people for stuff they don't.
You do think this is a...
He may well be offside, but he didn't elbow him.
And you know, you've got to think, if we start going down this road of picking up on every single thing, looking at the TMO and every single thing, it takes away from the nature of the sport, doesn't it?
Mm. If he had it clipped him with an elbow, then yes, I could have done it. But the video clip that's been circulating on social media shows nothing conclusive whatsoever.
No, and I think, you know, for the All Blacks, they need their comprehensive side, and I'm not sure we're going to see too many changes from the semi final into the final. You know, obviously depending on how training goes during the week, if anyone picks up any injuries there. But
I'd be very surprised to see any changes in the All Black team, as I think they had their best 15 out. And they've got their impact players like a Sonny Bill Williams, who in the last 15-20 minutes of a game really can make an impact against tired legs.
Of course they can. I'm going to move to Sunday now, Argentina versus Australia. Like you said, Rob, this was a slightly different atmosphere. The Argentinians always seem to bring a bit of a party to every game. They've just been fantastic, along with the team themselves.
I was in the ground, and I will say they were one of the best sets of fans throughout this whole tournament that I've experienced. They were cheering their team louder than some teams when they were winning, when they were down by 14 points. They were really chanting Argentina to the end. They really put their all into it. Unfortunately, their team was a bit naive.
Yes, they were outplayed, but you almost got the feeling that Australia really had done their homework throughout the week. And Argentina, who have been developing this different style of rugby, they have been very, very good at set pieces, as well as playing this brilliant running style of rugby as well.
You can play this, as you say, the running style of rugby, and I had no problem with that. They made some great breaks, although the Australian defence held firm when it really needed to. But you can't run it out of your own 22 in a World Cup semi-final. You have to play certain territory games, because when you make a mistake in your own 22, that's when it leads to tries. And the opening try was a great example of that. They tried to run it out from under their own sticks. A loose pass is intercepted, and Australia are 7 points up, and we've barely started the game.
Yeah, moving on to Australia, I think they do need to be a bit more reluctant in giving away penalties and so many points that way, because when you do come up against Dan Carter, you cannot give those three points away here and there, can you? What do you think they're going to be doing in preparation for this weekend's final, as well as all the other stuff? Do you think they're going to really hone down on their discipline?
Yeah, I think a bit of discipline, but also a bit of defence, because as much as it was firm in the 22 when it needed to be, there were a lot of holes further up the pitch which Argentina made some great breaks through. And let's face it, when you get, if you get someone like Nonu or Sonny Bill Williams breaking through those gaps, that's going to turn into points.
Yes. The Australian defence was quite solid, and they really had it all together there. Let's just talk about Pocock.
What's there to say? He does very well what he does, and it's going to be an interesting battle between the two back rows, I think. Pocock and Hooper against McCaw and Reed, I think, and obviously you've got the other two players involved in that. But yeah, this could be an interesting. This is where the game will be won, I think, in that who can get to that breakdown first and get that ball, who can make those key turnovers.
I think the statistics are something. He's made 14 turnovers this time around, and he's one of them players that has. You know, we've all been saying on social media how great him and Hooper have been working together, but he seems to be the epitome of that Australian side that is, you know, hard working there when you need. He's at the bottom of every single breakdown. Someone who almost is an unsung hero is Fardy, don't you think?
Yeah, he's it is very much the not prototypical, but the old classic back blindside flanker. Does the day, doesn't quite get the recognition the same as the other two positions in the back row, but is equally as important as the other two.
Yes, definitely, and I think we'll be seeing a lot more of, I think, what people are dubbing as Pooper, Pocock and Hooper.
Yeah.
Apparently that's something that is relevant to.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not
quite sure what the how that will go down in the Australian camp. But
yeah.
Nevertheless, they are I think this final is gonna be clearly the two best teams in the world, and I don't think
it's gonna be one in that back row battle. I think it's gonna be interesting to see, because obviously Pocock is actually more like a traditional open side flanker, but he's playing eight and running around and making those breaks, and that's how they're getting so quickly to his breakdown. They're playing two number sevens in effect. Now they're coming up against probably the world, if not even probably, in my opinion, the world's best number eight at the moment. If okay, he might get to the breakdown, but if he can deal with this with the sort of the intricacies of playing number eight against someone that does it better than anyone right now.
Yes, it's a massive clash of the titans, isn't it?
And yeah.
We'll sort of go a bit more onto the preview a little bit later on in the show. We're going to leave that review there for the minute and move on to the Aviva Premiership. Loads of rugby played this weekend. Gloucester lost on Friday night to Saracens 17-15. Sale won against newly promoted Worcester 27-13. Northampton Saints beat Newcastle 42-16 at home. Wasps beat Bath at the Ricoh Arena 16-9. Exeter beat London Irish 38-11. And Tigers got, I think, what we'll say is a very near victory over Harlequins 22-19. What do you make of that weekend's roundup, and what matches stood out for you, Rob?
The two matches stood out for me were Sale against Worcester, sort of back down to earth with a bump for Worcester after their heroics against Northampton the week before. I'm sure Dean Ryan wouldn't expect any less, that it's going to be a tough season for them, but this just sort of reminds them that, okay, we got off to a great start, but this is going to be a slog. We're going to have to work and battle for every point this season. The other one was Wasps Bath. Bath, obviously, playoff team last year, got to the final, just fell that one step short. Wasps continued their great form at their new home at the Ricoh Arena, and that it's going to be a tough place for anyone to go and get anything out of.
Yeah, one place that is a venue very difficult to come away with a win is Welford Road. Leicester Tigers, it almost felt like they stole that win off Harlequins, and you know, there's the reports that Conor O'Shea wasn't happy with the refereeing, and neither was Richard Cockerill. But it's come out, you know, the referee did his job. He was he's a up and coming referee, and actually, you know, didn't have a bad game at all. But Welford Rowan seems like one of these places that you can't get lucky, and you can't assume that you're, you know, at half time, yeah, okay, you might be in front, but you can't assume you're still going to come away with the win. You've got to plug it for 80 minutes, haven't you?
Yeah, oh, the Tigers fans are obviously really great, and they really lift that team. They are that 16th man, metaphorical 16th man. And again, we're looking at two teams that had what you'd consider down years. It's amazing we can talk about Leicester and a down year and they're still in the playoffs, but they were a bit fortunate to get in the playoffs, really. And I think Richard Cockerill, if he's honest, would admit that as well. They sort of sneaked in the back door. They weren't up to their usual standards, and they'll be looking to get back to those. Conor O'Shea has admitted many times that they had a poor year, especially the second half of the year, and they're looking to get back to winning ways. So it was interesting to see these teams come out, and we're starting to see how these teams are going to really progress this season, because we're starting to get the reintegration of World Cup players into squads, if not even starting lineups for certain players, depending on how much time they've been given off, because they can't afford to have them out for long periods, because as we said a couple of weeks ago when we were previewing the start, they've got 25 weeks of either European or Premiership rugby. The players will get breaks, but they can't afford to have them now.
No, there's no place to hide this year, is there?
No.
So another team who did get back to winning ways was Northampton Saints. They, you know, almost got over their shock loss to Worcester the week before. They got a resounding victory over Falcons 42-16 at Franklin's Gardens. Is this the Saints of old, and do you think they've sort of put the first weekend of Premiership behind them and they've really hit the ground running now?
Yeah, I think it's just Northampton, they've got that squad that is always going to be there or thereabouts. As they start to reintegrate more of their World Cup players, you start to get players like George North and Courtney Laws back. They're really, really going to be. I think Ben Foden was playing at the weekend, I saw, and he was playing quite well. It's good to see him back after all his injuries problems last year.
Yeah.
And he'll be thinking, okay, the England team hasn't done well, there's going to be a fresh start, I can get reinsert myself into this, whether it be initially as a backup to Mike Brown, or he'll be thinking, I want to challenge Mike Brown for that. So yeah, getting their key players back will obviously help Northampton, and yeah, I expect them to be challenging at the top end of the table this season. I'm not expecting a particular hard slide down the table.
No. I completely forgot to mention, did you see the young 17-year-old for Leicester Tigers? He came on as a replacement for Sam Harrison in the last few minutes of the Tigers match at the weekend. His name's Ben White. Ben White, he's come through the academy, 17-year-old. I think he's the youngest Tigers player to play in the Premiership.
Well, obviously we wish him all the best, and hopefully he can turn out to be a good star going forward. And it's what we want to see from the teams, if we're putting our England hats on, is young players coming through, making an impact. We'd much prefer that to big names coming in for lots of money, sometimes not making the impact they want to, but it's good to see players coming through the academies.
Yeah, and it's always great to have that grassroots rugby. It's the in-word at the minute, but it's so relevant, isn't it? It's you know, it's great to see the lads coming up through the ranks, learning as they go along, and to get these opportunities. It's you know, it's a money can't buy opportunity, and obviously he did a great job, and he's, you know, really put his name forward for the next few years at Tigers. So yeah, great credit to him, and we will see what happens in the future with him. Pro 12 action now. Scarlets started off the this weekend's action. They hosted Munster and won 25-22. Newport Gwent Dragons beat Benetton Treviso 19-12. Ulster beat Cardiff Blues 24-17. Leinster narrowly beat Glasgow 23-18. Zebra had the shock win over Edinburgh 19-11. And Ospreys lost 16-21 to Connaught. I said there, Rob, the Zebra match was a bit of a shock. did you manage to have a quick look at it, and what did you make of it?
Yeah, I think you were saying something. The Italian teams are really getting a bit closer this year. Obviously, Zebre got a win, which is great. They're now getting in that mix. Yeah, it's a bit of a shock to see them beating Edinburgh, who were in the Challenge Cup final last year. So it's one of those. Okay, that's a real step up. Benetton Treviso, yeah, they haven't won a match yet, but out of five games, they've got four losing bonus points. They are this close to winning games. So we're seeing from last year where both teams were getting hammered more often than not, it's nice to see them competing.
Yes, and that's what the Pro Tour is all about. And it's, you know, it's the great thing about domestic rugby is, you know, you bring all these 12 teams together, and you know, they wouldn't be in there just to make up numbers. They're there to compete, and you know, this is what we like to see. We like to see wins here, there, and everywhere. And it's nice, and it's a confident boost not only for the team and the backroom staff, but for the fans who clearly travel all over supporting their squad. And you know, to come away with a win is great for them. So
it's great confidence boost, and they'll take it forward into the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I think it's probably what they need, isn't it?
Mm.
Leinster beat Glasgow 23-18. Obviously, they were at home, and the RDS Arena is such a massive fortress. It almost felt like Glasgow were there, but not thereabouts.
I think this is the unfortunate sort of result of having some. I mean, when you've only got Glasgow and Edinburgh, and a lot of the Scottish players are going away, a lot of them came from Glasgow for the World Cup, so they are missing more than most in terms of their World Cup contingent. And obviously Scotland getting through to the quarterfinals has kept those players away for longer. So I expect Glasgow, obviously last year's winners, to start bouncing back once they start to reintegrate those Scotland players.
Yeah, I think across the board, when we see these World Cup players coming back in, it's really going to be a morale boost for the sides. And it'll be interesting to see what they can bring, because obviously not only have they got that experience, but depending on how long they've been rested for, a lot of these players perhaps are they're going to be fresh pair of legs, and they're going to be ready just to get back out for their team, and they're going to be eager for that win, aren't they?
Yeah, I think obviously, all the players that are coming back into the Pro 12 are going to be teams that finished on a losing note. There's no Northern Hemisphere sides in the final, so they're going to want to prove a point. They're going to say, okay, my last game at the World Cup was a loss, I want to win again.
Definitely, and I think that's the fighting attitude that runs throughout rugby and the leagues as well as international level. We're going to leave that there and move on to the news now. Nigel Owens is to referee the World Cup final. I put it on social media the other day. I'm yet to meet somebody who is disappointed by this news. The best referee in the world, Rob, what would you say?
There's obviously a few that it could be. It's very hard to measure whether you're a best one. I think he's one of the ones with a better sense of humour.
Yeah,
definitely. and sorry to our Welsh listeners out there, but a Welshman refereeing means Wales aren't in there, and that's always a bonus for, as an Englishman.
That's very true. I'm not sure if you caught the documentary that was on TV early this week, but obviously when it was filmed, he didn't know he was going to be ref in the World Cup final. And for somebody who you see for 80 minutes week in, week out on in the middle of a pitch in charge of 30 men, you only see him in one sort of light. But this documentary, you know, it went through his whole life, and you sort of understand where his tendencies on the field come from. You just picked up then his comedy and wit, which we all love him for, and he's renowned through social media and through newspapers and stuff for. But there's meanings behind it, and you almost get the feeling like that he has got so much love for the sport, he is the way he is on the field to maintain that respect and the whole thing that comes with rugby, that the respect and the traditional values and the solidarity.
Yeah, I I didn't actually see the documentary, but I'm just hoping that he doesn't have too much to do on Saturday. We want to see, obviously, a good, clean game that flows. Unfortunately, I don't really want to see is something we've seen too much of, I think, in this tournament, is him talking to a guy in a studio looking at a TV.
That's very true. The one good thing I personally feel about Nigel Owen is that he doesn't stop play. He allows play to carry on, doesn't blow his whistle too much. But even when he's talking to the officials off pitch, the TMO or whatever,
yeah,
he's continuing play. Mm. And if he needs be, he then stops it when he's sure that he needs to either go back to a certain phase or award a penalty here. That they showed a clip when, I think it was from the World Cup, when he wasn't sure whether it was a high tackle, and he allowed play to carry on until he knew for sure that the TMO said it was a high tackle, and that's when he awarded the advantage and the penalty. So he's one of those refs that, because he allows the game to flow at his natural pace, it's credit to him, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're going to move back to Premiership news now. The Premiership Rugby have reached a settlement in the alleged salary cap breach. This was stuff that was flying around about two clubs in the Aviva Premiership who had breached the salary cap. But that aside, they said that there is going to be no fines or deduction of points or anything now, because nothing was actually proven. But they have gone on to say that in the next few years, the salary cap is actually going to be increased. Mm. It's 5.5 million this season. It's going to go up to 6.5 in the 2016/17 season, and then £7 million the following year. Rob, is this just encouraging high key, you know, big name players to move to the Premiership because clubs can afford to bring these marquee names in?
It isn't. The one thing I took out from it was the good thing was that you're still going to get the sort of the sanctions for bringing the exemptions for bringing your own players through. I think that is a key part of this deal that needed to be kept in there. I think if that had gone, that would have worried me more. You are going to get some clubs bringing big players in, but maybe if, because they've got a bit more freedom, they can bring one or two guys for a lot of money. So bring your top players through on a large salary, and then maybe they can help bring through your youngsters, because you're going to get better by playing with those players. So it has its pros and its cons. The one thing that worries me is basically everything's been done with the confidential agreements, in inverted commas. I would have liked to see a lot more transparency of how this has worked, because you always get that when it's confidential, you get a nagging feeling is, okay, a couple of the clubs did something wrong, we're just going to sweep it under the carpet.
Yeah, and for such a big organisation that is pumped full of so much money through sponsorships and through fans buying tickets and all sorts, you would have thought that there would have been some of, you know, more transparency. I know Wasps Rugby came out a couple of weeks ago saying that they were one of the teams who hadn't been investigated.
Yes, Sale have had the same as well.
You do almost get the feeling that teams who haven't been caught red-handed are going to come out, and it's going to get to the point where it's...
We're left with Saracens.
Where you're left with the two clubs who were, and it's process of elimination, isn't it?
I think a lot of fans will agree. Saracens is probably one of them, given they're such a... their chairman has been such a proponent of getting rid of the salary cap or raising the salary cap. You have to think, okay, there's no sort of smoke without fire in that end. Just for me, transparency. Rugby has opportunity at the moment, given what's happening over across the sort of the sporting spectrum in football, with all the corruption allegations and investigations going on. What we've had in other sports like cycling, just to say, look, okay, we're not going to go down that road of cloak and dagger and deals behind closed doors. We're going to lay it all out there and make sure that our sport is clean. Because vigilance is as much the proponent here that you need to have to make sure you don't go down that road of corruption and secret deals and things. And I'm not suggesting this deal is that, but it's it's you start down that suspicious route, and where does it take you?
Yeah, and no one likes a cheater, do they? So
no,
we'll, no, definitely not. Sticking with the Premiership, it has been revealed Jean de Villiers has signed for Leicester Tigers. It was a long process, and it was on the table, and then it was off the table. And we've mentioned it before here on Absolute Flanker that it could be, and we've heard from Richard Cockerill saying that it was on the table. Jean de Villiers had kindly declined, but Cockerill said that the door was still open, and apparently so.
Yeah, a bit of an on again, off again move, and it's sort of a move that's on pause given his current injury status, getting his with his broken jaw. So it'll be a while before we actually see him in a Tigers shirt, but he's obviously got a lot of experience, and as I think you said last week, there's sort of reminiscent of the sort of Brad Thorne retirement tour going on here.
Yeah, it's almost like they're the swan song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we had New Zealand last year. We've got South Africa. So which Australian's coming to the end of his career next year that's going to come into Tigers for a year?
Let's think about that. The 34-year-old has I think we're assuming it's a 6-month deal. He will link up with Leicester at the start of December. Obviously, like you said, Rob, he's got to get over his broken jaw injury that he sustained during the World Cup. And we're thinking he's going to play to the end of the year. And, you know, then if he feels like he's got another season in him, he can decide if he stays at Leicester or where he moves on to. Would you be surprised if he had another season in him?
It depends. I think it depends how he goes through with injuries through the rest of the year. Obviously, he's coming back off broken jaw, which isn't sort of a big one on the body in the same way like a knee or ankle or something like that is. But he could well go on for another year, but I think that's going to be him looking at how his body feels come the end of the season.
Yeah, I think we're all aware of his documented injury woes, especially when it comes to World Cups and the disappointment he's had there through injury. First of all, do Tigers need more injuries on their list?
Yes and
or,
no.
Or injury scares on their list?
Yeah, the injury he's got coming in is not really an issue, because as with the on again off again nature of the deal, I think Richard Cockerill and the staff, they had planned to not have him, so getting him in's a bonus. Okay, that bonus is going to come in December, but being the fact he's injured now isn't the biggest issue, because they weren't planning to have him. So it's like signing a player that's contract would run out in December, and that's when he can join. So the fact that he's had his injury history is possibly a worry, but I think given his stature, his experience, and just his downright ability, it's definitely worth taking the risk on a player like that.
Is his experience and obviously his prowess as, you know, South Africa captain, and you know he's been there, done that, got the t-shirt, everything. Is that something that Tigers, the younger lads at Tigers, and you know the ones who've been there and you know established themselves, is this something that they can utilise and he can guide them on as Brad Thorne did last year? Or do you feel, and a few people are saying, we need to stop bringing these big names in, Louis Picamol and guys like this, who the big names who have a big price tag with them. Clubs are getting them in because of their stature, but it means younger lads who have come up through the academy or who had that opportunity is not there for them anymore. Do you feel like that it's almost we'll get a big name in because of who they are and the big deal that comes with them and the interest, above lads who could be expanding their game throughout their club rugby?
With de Villiers, I think it's so different because he's only on a 6-month contract, so he's only been here to the end of this season. It is a tough season, as we said, given the truncated nature of it due to the World Cup. So there is still going to be opportunities because they're going to, couple like all the other directors, Rob, out there, is going to rest players. And those players are going to benefit hugely from training with de Villiers week in, week out. His leadership is obviously not questioned, having been captain of South Africa and all the different things that come with that, both sporting and political, really. So I think it's a great sign. I think these big signings, it's a case-by-case merit basis. You have to weigh the pros and cons of it. So say you get a player that's 29 who you sign on a three-year contract, is very different to a 34-year-old former World Cup winner that you sign on a six-month deal.
Is this a road that the Premiership is, it would be dangerous for them to go down, to continually allow signings of big marquee names because of who they are? And yes, there's experience and a level of mentorship that they bring to a side. Is this putting in danger the abilities and the opportunities for players who are already at clubs?
No, I think the big one or two marquee names is fine. It's the second and third tier players that you bring in sort of just because they're there almost. I think that starts to become the issue. That's when you say, well, surely we can just use one of our academy lads for that position. The big guys, the guys who are obviously world class, are going to bring something to your team and your squad and help develop the younger lads. It's that second tier and third tier level of player from foreign climate that is like, does he really add something that you didn't already have?
Is it putting in jeopardy the system for the England team? Purely because if you don't have, obviously there's this whole thing that especially Stuart Lancaster's brought in, you've got to play in this country to play for the country. If there's a cap on where you can play, do you think there should be a cap on how many outsider and foreign players we have coming in, just so we don't jeopardise the ability of the England side?
I don't think at this point it's that much issue because we have more clubs than any other nation, say France. Because we have the 12 Premiership teams, obviously they have the top 14, but you look at Wales 4, Ireland 4, Scotland 2, Italy 2, I'm talking just obviously top class teams here that play at the Super Rugby, obviously none of them have 12 teams each. Obviously you have the level next below it, but all their internationals play Super Rugby, so they play for one of those teams.
Yeah.
So there's a fact that, okay, let's say, for example, Saracens next week somehow did a deal to bring in Bernard Foley. Well, okay, Owen Farrell might not get the opportunity at Saracens, but I'm pretty sure there's 11 other teams that he could speak to in England and still have a potential job at one of those.
Yeah. Well, we'll leave that there for the minute. We're going to move on to Welsh Rugby now, and the Welsh Rugby Union have rejected a transfer request for Talupe Faletau to move to Bath. Basically, if you're if you need bringing up to speed on this, the back row forward wanted, well, it was thought that he wanted to move to Bath from Newport Gwent Dragons, and the Dragons had, well, were willing to release him from his contract that would have seen him out to the end of the 2015-16 season. Basically, the Welsh Rugby Union have turned around and rejected this, saying that clubs need to fulfil their contractual agreements as well as the players do. Is this something that, obviously, it's very disappointing for Bath, who obviously were after him, and for Faletau himself, who obviously wanted to expand his career after the World Cup, and obviously Warren Gatland only chooses players for the Wales side, predominantly those who
play. Well, he's got his wild cards. I think he under the current contract he can have two.
Yeah,
who play outside. At the moment, that is Lee Halfpenny and Jamie Roberts.
Yeah, he. Well,
oh no, it's not Lee Halfpenny. Sorry, it's two that he can have beyond those that were there when they were when they brought the rule in. So I think it's it's Jamie Roberts and Rhys Priestland were the wild cards, but Jonathan Davis and Lee Halfpenny, although they didn't go because of the injury to the World Cup, it would have been all right because they were in France when the law, when the contract was signed, so there are exemptions.
Yeah, so Faletau, apparently there was a submission of a formal request to Warren Gatland. He said no. The Welsh Rugby Union have said no, so he is staying at Newport Gwent Dragons. You made a valid point when we spoke about it before, Rob, that when it comes to the end of the season, so many clubs are going to be after him.
Mm.
It's a missed opportunity for Newport Gwent Dragons to get that transfer fee. So they've missed out on a sack of money through, you know, if Bath were going to have him, they would have had to pay a transfer fee to the Dragons. So they've missed out on that. Bath have missed out on a move for Faletau that would have stood them in good stead for the rest of the Premiership season. And when it comes to the end of his contract, so many teams are going to be after him. It's almost like it's going to be a free-for-all, no?
Yeah, it could well be. Where he goes possibly depends on his relationship with Warren Gatland at this point, because Warren Gatland may convince him to stay in Wales. But wouldn't surprise me if the other three Welsh regions have a cheeky conversation with him, because he will be out of his contract with the Dragons. So it wouldn't surprise me if the Ospreys or the Scarlets might just have a quick word in his ear and say, well, come play for us, because you can still play for Wales. And that, Bath obviously have missed out. I mean, Gatland's doing what he feels is best for the Welsh side, and that's his job. That is what he's paid to do.
Yeah,
you're not going to criticise him for that, because that's what he's hired by Wales to do. And we will see how it pans out at the end of the season, whether Faletau moves across from across the borders to England, maybe to France, or whether he stays with one of the Welsh regions.
Do you think there is a chance that a French side could poach him?
I think there's definitely a chance.
He's only 24, but with 4 years to the World Cup, regardless of the Lions tour, he's got 4 years. He could go and play a couple of years abroad, get loads of money behind him, and then move back to the Welsh provinces in time for the next World Cup.
Yeah, he could well do that. Obviously, the French teams have got the money to do that, whether it be a Toulouse or a Racing Metro or even a Toulon. Who knows what could happen? I don't know how it'll affect the Lions team players playing in France. I'm assuming that given which British players are out there at the moment, that some of them are going to be wanted by whoever's the Lions coach. Obviously, we don't know who that's going to be yet, so that could play some part in it as well. So we will have to wait and see who gets picked as that, to see whether that had any impact on what players do, because players are going to want to play it. But be interesting that this will be the first sort of tour that we get where this, the fight between the French clubs and the Lions, comes into play.
Definitely. We're going to move on now. That's the news done and out of the way for another week. We're going to move on now to previewing this weekend. We have got the final of the World Cup, obviously between New Zealand and Australia, but the day before on Friday at the Olympic Park, Friday night, 8 o'clock kickoff, South Africa versus Argentina to decide who comes in bronze position. What do you think both teams can get out of this? It's basically, you know, they've got nothing to lose. Neither side have got nothing to lose. They're both coming off backs of wins. Argentina clearly with the bigger loss score margin-wise. One, what are you predicting, and who to win? And two, what are you thinking that both teams are going to be preparing for Friday's match? Because it's as Heineke Meyer very nicely put it, this match is kind of worthless. He said it was like kissing his sister.
Yeah, it's a game nobody really wants to play. You've already lost, you're already out. It doesn't really mean anything. It hasn't meant anything since 1995 from a qualification point of view. That was the last time that it had something like qualifying for the next World Cup riding on it. So it's tough to get yourself motivated. I think both sides will want to leave on a bit of a high. I don't see any change in the Argentinian style of play. I think they'll try and run it a lot, and I don't see a lot in a change in the South African style of play. So it may be attack against defence for a lot of the game. I just think maybe that, well, my hope is if that's the case, Argentina come out, because I prefer seeing attacking rugby as a fan. It's just, it's nicer to watch. I understand the need for defensive rugby, and when you're playing, it's a very different attitude you take towards it. I think maybe that would come out on top. The South African defence was very strong a lot of the game against New Zealand. I think I'm going to, if they can play a bit more territory, I don't say they have to stop running everything, but maybe when you're in your own 22, give Sanchez, who is a world class fly half, let him boot the ball down the field a little bit. Maybe Argentina can come out with a win. If they try running it from under their sticks every time, I think maybe they get caught out again.
So who are you saying?
I'm going to hope that attacking flair wins, and I'm going to go with Argentina.
Well, I'm going to go against you and go for Springboks. We are going to move on to the final now. There has been such a big hype about it. I don't think anyone can take anything away from either of these sides. They both deserve to be there. One simple question, Rob. Who do you think is going to win?
Something inside me just says the Wallabies can get it, can do this. They just seem to have that little bit of magic in them when they need it.
Okay.
And as apart from the France game, where France were poor in fairness, New Zealand haven't sort of lived up to their own high standards.
Yes.
So I think that's more the. It's one of those things where you're measuring yourself against yourself almost. Like they're playing well compared to a lot of other teams, but not compared to what they can do as a team.
With fear of being completely slated and, you know, people coming after me with pitchforks, I have a feeling, you know, New Zealand haven't played to their full potential.
They're playing well compared to other teams in the World Cup. But compared to what this team can do, they're not hitting those heights.
Personally, I would say Australia have had the better campaign so far.
Yeah.
Despite who comes out top on Saturday in the final, Australia have... obviously, New Zealand have got 3 wins from 3 out of their pool as well, but Australia just looked that little bit more convincing.
Yeah, and this is an Australian team that's beaten New Zealand this year. Yeah, New Zealand took their revenge and won the Bledisloe Cup by winning by a bigger margin, but Australia took home the Rugby Championship. This is not a foregone conclusion by any means, and I think Watson Matilda might be ringing round Twickenham come the end of 80 minutes.
Well, we will see, and by definitely 7 o'clock on Saturday night our time, we will know whether it's the new champions of the world or reigning champions continuing their reign. We're going to move now. It kind of feels like a bit of an anticlimax, but I'm sure it won't be. It's going to be amazing, definitely. We're going to move on now to the Aviva Premiership. Saracens will play London Irish, Bath will play Harlequins, Gloucester host Worcester, Newcastle face Exeter Chiefs, it's Sale Sharks versus Northampton, and then rounding off the weekend, Leicester Tigers host Wasps in a relatively new local derby. What are you keeping your eye on this weekend, Premiership wise?
Bath Quins and Tigers Wasps are the two that stand out for me. Bath Quins to start with. Bath are going to both teams are going to want to bounce back, having lost games last week. Quins obviously looking a step up from where they were last year. Bath possibly looking to sort of step down, but obviously they're still waiting on a lot of to integrate a lot of their England players, so that'll be interesting to see how they do that. Quins have got quite a few players themselves to come back, not just England players. I think Tim Visser and Jamie Roberts should be back this week, if not in the starting lineup as part of the squad. So yeah, they've both got experience to come in. Could be a tight game, should be a good one to watch. Tigers Wasps, as you said, relatively new local derby, but going back beyond just when the Wasps moved to Coventry, this has always been a tight fixture. Two very good teams, very historic teams, and I'm going to give Tigers the edge just because it's at Welford Road. I think if it had been at the Rico, you'd possibly look at it the other way around.
Yeah. The Saracens and London Irish game this weekend, news has come out that the reverse of that fixture that will be played in March of 2016 is actually going to be held at New York's Red Bull Arena. It's only come out today. I'm assuming this is part of Premiership Rugby's development across the pond in America of rugby, and a lot of the Premiership sides have sister clubs over there.
Quinns did a deal with the USA Eagles themselves, didn't they? This summer. So it's definitely something that's looking good in terms of developing rugby. If you look at the reverse sort of thing, how the NFL has built up over the years, over this doing similar games, and has built its popularity over the last sort of 8 years it's been doing it, it's something that could possibly be replicated the opposite way around. Especially after Christmas, when the NFL is off season for America, it's going to have the sort of the big huge the similar sort of contact of rugby and American football to itself almost.
Yeah, 25,000 capacity is the Red Bull Arena. Like you said, is NFL off season. So is this going to be, obviously it's going to be a massive occasion for both of these sides, but do you think over in New York it will grab the interest of a lot of New Yorkers and Americans over there, purely because it's a Premiership match, but because it's somewhat unknown territory domestically for America? Yes, the national side has been in the World Cup, but on a domestic level, there's not many games of rugby that get played of this standard over in America, is there?
No, but I think it will grab New York. Obviously, it's been played at the Red Bull Arena, home to the New York Red Bulls football club, so a sort of European football or football association football. So it's not an NFL stadium, but it's a solid foundation. 25,000. If you look at the amount of sports teams they have in New York, you can tell this is just a sporting city. They've got two NFL teams, two basketball, two baseball, two football, to ice hockey teams. They're just mad about their sport, so I can't see them not selling it out. And obviously, if you sell out 25,000, maybe next year you go back and you have it at the Meadowlands, which is the NFL stadium of New York, which is obviously a bigger capacity, and you move it forward, and you work towards those sort of things based on how well it's received.
Yeah, so it's a little different to the Medjeski Stadium, which it would have been held at. But this weekend, it's Saracens versus London Irish at the Allianz Park. It's going to be great, this weekend of Premiership. I think the whole atmosphere around this weekend, rugby-wise, is just going to be great. Also, Pro 12 action going on this weekend. Munster will host Ulster. Scarlets will face Newport Gwent Dragons. Zebra face Cardiff Blues. Connaught versus Edinburgh. And Glasgow will try and get a win over Ospreys. Any of those matches take your fancy, Rob?
Munster, Ulster, obviously, two of the big Ireland sides coming in. So then Ulster getting over the news that Tommy Bowe will be out for the rest of the season now. His injury, worse than first feared.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's a blow for Ireland as well, because he won't play in the Six Nations. And Tommy Bowe is one of the best wingers in the world. He constantly plays brilliantly for Ireland, and Ulster are going to miss him going forward. It'd be interesting to see how they, not just this weekend, but how over the coming weeks they sort of adapt and deal with that loss.
Yeah, it's going to be, sorry, one I missed off on there, Leinster versus Benetton Treviso as well. It's going to be one of these weekends, whether you're watching the World Cup or you're at a Pro 12 or Premiership game, wherever you are, it's just going to be an amazing weekend of rugby, isn't it?
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Definitely. And that's it for this week on Absolute Flanker. Thank you very much for joining us. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/LWS/flanker. We're on Facebook at LWS Flanker as well. Rob, what is your Twitter handle?
LWS Rob.
Mine is at Molly Ray Maria. You can follow our rugby page on Twitter at LWOS Rugby Union. And yeah, it'd be great to hear from you. Let us know what you think of this weekend's action and the news. And if you've got anything to tell us, let us know. And it would be great to hear from you. Thank you very much. Thanks to Rob for joining me.
No worries. Thank you, Rory.
And we'll be back next week with the new world champions, won't we?
Yeah.
It'd be great. Thank you very much and see you soon.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.